and the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, and in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the Lord for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajnam paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, to confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. And in the practice of loving kindness, and in the practice of pure attention, and in the practice of ever-expanding faith, and in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi saha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Out from the back of the crown of the head. Shoulders are dropped. Belly's relaxed. Eyes are open. Cast down. Mind should wander, which it will. Just notice where it's gone, gently bringing it back and beginning your counting again with one at the bottom of the exhalation. nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just breathing and counting and noticing. just here, just breathing.
suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If anything suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to release. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
So a reminder for folks who are new to practice that there are backjacks back in the corner, and now would be a good time to get one if you'd like to use a backjack to sit on during group. Morning group discussions are recorded and made available to monthly donors.
Sure. Jen, I don't know about the temperature. I'm going to have to keep those doors closed because somebody's working behind those doors. So mm-hmm. People are hot and the fans need to go. We might just have to increase the volume.
Increase the volume. Okay. All right. Well, especially for folks out that end of the room, maybe you could give me a holler if the temperature is getting too hot.
It's already there.
We're already there. Okay. So why don't we try the fans on low and see how we do. And so now for folks who are at that end, please do feel free to put a finger up if you're not able to hear. So this morning's group discussion is an open discussion, available to look at whatever you're seeing in your practice. And since we often say everything in life is within practice, that kind of leaves the field wide open. So what shall we look at this morning?
Monitoring. trying to think of all the physical parts of meditation.
Yes.
The breathing and the counting.
Yep.
And in the beginning, I can count to 10.
Yep.
And as the time goes on, I have a lot of ones.
Yes. Anyone else?
And they're just, it's like it builds up somehow.
Yeah.
I'm not able to release it.
Yes. So there's already, in those first four sentences, so much in what you said, Laura, that's so great to look at. One is to realize that so often we're talked into thinking that if I'm on one, that somehow I'm doing a bad job, right? Or something's gone wrong. But what we're missing in that is the reality that if I keep coming back to one, that means I keep coming back. Do you know what I mean? Because if I were truly just completely gone, just all the way unconscious and not aware of anything that was going on in the meditation, the bell would ring at the end of the meditation and I'd realize, oh right, I was supposed to be counting. Right? So, we had someone who lived here for many years as a monk and still practices, who talks about the miracle is one. Right? The fact that we come back, that's all we're doing. You know, then so often conditioning wants to get us into a contest. How many times can I make it to 10? Am I doing it right? Right? To get us into that, basically to get us into a conversation about that, to get us pulled away from what we're doing, which is just simply being here, breathing, and counting. Yeah? And so interesting in the way that you laid it out, that, again, as we looked at last night in the group discussion, all we're doing as we're here in the retreat is seeing all the things that habitually go on for us. And it sounds like for you, one of those things is trying to get it right. So, of course, what's going to happen when we come to practice? That same thing is going to happen, trying to get it right. And our only job, if you will, is to just simply see that. Can you get a sense of that?
I can. I don't feel as time goes on that I'm able to let it go.
Yes.
Completely. Mm-hmm. And come back to one and breathe. But the stuff is there closer.
Yes.
More insistent.
Right.
And to a place where I don't feel like I'm able to let it go.
Right. So we can't lose sight of the fact that you've been here for, what, 12 hours? So lots of, I mean, what you're describing is what we're all up against in practice. Is that as we begin to pay attention, those conditioned forces that have been in control of our lives will also begin to sort of up the ante, if you will. Right? Because it's not just a matter of, oh, okay, great, she's going to pay attention now, let's leave her alone. Right? Often there's a ramping up of all the stuff that's going on inside of our head as we begin to pay attention to it. So many tools to come throughout the week to assist us with that very skill of being able to see it and then drop it and not need to be so involved with it. And you know, probably one of the most important things, tools to carry with us throughout the week and throughout practice is compassion. Right? To notice how very sincere is the practitioner, the person who came to this retreat and who is so willing to see what's going on and gets caught up in it. And lots of compassion and patience for that, learning the skill of not being so involved with it. Thank you. Sure, did I see your name?
So, what I noticed was there was another
So
there was another meditation spiritual teacher that I've been listening to audio tapes of, and one thing she had said was, you know, if you go into a meditation hall, it seems like everyone is so peaceful, it's calm. Uh-huh. But inside, it's really a battle. Uh-huh. And for me, that's what it was like. I was fidgety. Uh-huh. I really had to go to the bathroom. It's like, go to the bathroom, and then once that final bell rang, that all of that disappeared. So I figured that would happen.
Are you guys hearing down there?
Yeah. I figured that would be the case, but I couldn't relax into knowing that it was okay. Uh-huh. It was just like, I have to talk to Jan, I have to tell her, I have to go, I'm feeling crazy, I need to throw up, something's wrong. Uh-huh. And once the final bell rang and I turned around, I'm like, oh, what a relief. And it was very hard to, I mean, I got to 10 because I was just focused on getting to 10, mm-hmm. but there was all this other stuff, and it wasn't voices mm-hmm. per se, it was just feelings
in
the body,
sensations in the body,
you know, just, mm-hmm. I don't know, what are songs in my head, whatever it was, and I was just so happy when it was done. Uh-huh. But the other thing that I noticed was, I've never done a meditation where I'm facing against a wall. Uh-huh. So normally I'm able to kind of quietly open my eyes and see what other people are doing. Uh-huh. And, you know, and this was just like, wow, where do I look? What do I do? There's nowhere to go. I have to be with my own breath. And that was interesting.
So, yeah. Oh my gosh. Again, so much in that, really. You know, what I'm hearing and what you're saying is why we call it the hero's journey. You know, because it can seem like, okay, I'm going to come into this room and I'm going to turn around and place face a blank wall and be quiet for a half hour. Well, that's the easiest thing in the world, right? But actually, not at all. And no mistake that you don't see very many people choosing to do it, right? As you say, you know, that one meditation teacher who said, oh, you can walk into a meditation hall and it seems like, oh, it's so peaceful and everyone's just in bliss and, you know, oh, what's really going on is this battle inside of the head. But also what you talked about really underlines the wisdom of, I think last night Ashwini used the phrase, the wisdom of no escape. And it's the reason why we sit still in the meditation hall. It's why we face a blank wall. And it's why the guidance is not to leave the hall no matter what. You know, because everything can happen. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I feel like I'm going to pass out. I feel like I'm going to die. I can't stand it anymore. You know, all of those things. But how often in our lives that same thing is happening, but we're not seeing it because we're so, okay, drink coffee. Oh, go watch TV. Oh, talk to a friend. Oh, whatever it is, we get away from it in some way. But to be sort of forced, if you will, and we could come to see it as a gift, to have the gift of just sitting still with it and realizing that it's not true. You know, all of that stuff that's threatening, oh my gosh, you can't stand it, you're not going to make it, it's actually not true.
The interesting thing is when it was happening, I firmly believed it was true.
Yes.
Even though part of me knew, I don't think it'll be true when it's all over.
Yes.
But I fall for it every single time.
Exactly. But what's so great about practice is that when we build up a meditation practice, and so there's literal meditation, sitting down on the cushion and facing a blank white wall, and then there are all different forms, and a lot of them we'll talk about this week, of sitting still with something. And as we do that over and over and over again, it becomes much less believable that we can't stand it and that we won't make it. And as we do that, as we prove that to ourselves in all these different areas, then as we're out in our lives, it begins to occur to us. You know, we're in a situation where we're in an argument with someone we love and I can't stand it, and we realize, wait, the same thing probably applies here. Maybe it's not true that I have to do this thing or act out in this way or say this thing, or maybe in the same way I can sit still through this.
Mm-hmm. Listening to what you just said, you just made me realize that it's not true either when you're trying to meditate and allowing yourself to just enjoy the beauty out there while meditating. The challenge for me right now is to meditate with my eyes open,
uh-huh.
looking outside a window when a doe appears at the pond and starts drinking.
Yeah.
Not something I see every day.
Yeah.
And it was a real challenge for me to not watch. Uh-huh. I really wanted to watch her drink. Uh-huh. And I did the entire time. Uh-huh. I didn't count. Uh-huh. And I did not feel guilty about it. Uh-huh. I enjoy beauty, and but beauty is also, in some ways, a distraction. At least that's what I just kind of made the connection with right now, and listening to what you just said, and I'm like, huh, that was also a distraction, as opposed to a gift that I wanted to enjoy momentarily.
Yeah, that's a very good subtle catch there. Mm-hmm. And maybe a slight rephrasing, that it's maybe not so much the beauty that's the distraction, as getting talked out of getting to have meditation. Mm-hmm. Right? So, again, we talked about this last night. We've all come a really long way to bring yourself here, right? All the things you've rearranged in your life in order to be here. And then we're offered the experience of meditation. And then we start to get into a conversation of, well, but you know, oh gosh, I don't get to see a bill who drank out of the pond that often. I mean, gosh, wouldn't it be nice? You know, I think I won't count. I think I won't meditate. And that could seem like a kindness, like, oh, that's a nice thing to do for myself. But when we really start to pay attention at a subtle level, that's not at all a kindness to the person, is it? To get robbed of the experience that I came here to have. And what's so fabulous about it is life doesn't tend to put us in an either-or situation, right? So, all right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to eat my breakfast outside, and I'll bet you that dough will show up at some point. So I get to have that experience. And then how about when I come to meditation, I'll choose a spot in front of the wall.
Mm-hmm. I realized that quite quickly. Where is it? Everything turned up while I was watching, but also meditating with your eyes open, not something I'm used to, and I find that quite challenging.
And do you have a sense of why that might be helpful? Why the guidance might be to meditate with your eyes open?
Well, at an intellectual level, I understand that practicing meditation with my eyes open allows me to be in the moment and present any time of the day outside of meditation.
You got it.
So at the intellectual level, I understand it.
Yep.
In my practice, I still find that I can be more present with my eyes closed.
Right.
When I'm practicing.
Yeah. Yes. And now, you said the critical thing, as of now. Right? As of now. But again, if we, and that's fine, right? So I can be really present with my eyes closed. Okay, but that's going to be tricky when I'm driving the car. You know, or in a meeting at work, or all kinds of situations. So then what I do is, okay, well, if I'm training for mastery, if what I want is to be able to be present to my amazing life, to a human incarnation all the time, then I'm going to take it to this next level. And anytime we take something to the next level, you know, let's say we're playing a sport, and I start to get pretty good, and so I choose opponents who are that much better. At first, it's going to feel like I've gone backwards, right? Gosh, I was winning all those other matches, and now I'm not winning. Well, that's because I'm up the ante. It doesn't mean that my game has gone backwards. It's that I'm rising to the challenge. So same thing with awareness practice. So I choose to be aware all the time. So, okay, so I'm going to start meditating with my eyes open. Well, that is going to be a whole next layer of challenge, and it takes me back to what we were looking at with Laura, the compassion that we bring to that process, you know? So I feel like I'm not that present with my eyes open yet, but I bet I will be.
It's also a belief system. I mean, there are other meditation practices that believe that it's okay to meditate with your eyes closed.
Uh-huh.
So if in the spirit of nothing being right or wrong,
yes.
I do feel I have a choice.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're going to challenge me on that. But
well, the great thing about Buddhism is there's no need to challenge anything, right? Because it's all about our own experience. And we get to find out, right? So you're going to get to practice over time in your own practice. What tends to assist me more with being present on a moment-by-moment basis in my life? Is it meditating with my eyes closed or my eyes open? In terms of being here this week, I would definitely give you the encouragement to follow the guidance, if only because then you get the experience of what it's like to follow guidance. Do you know what I'm pointing out with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But as you say, there are no right and wrongs. You know, the Buddha taught that we're each looking to our own experience to see what's so. What's tricky is that so often we're looking to a voice in our head to decide what's so. And that's why we have guides and practices and meditation retreats to assist us with not having to look to that as the authority, but being able to learn to look to life.
Well, there are several things that have been said this morning that I noticed grabbed my attention. And it's anytime there was mention of appreciation for the practitioner, mm-hmm. and that compassion and getting to really experience what we came here to experience.
Yeah.
And it resonates with, you know, we're in the beginning of the Bridge Walk campaign where we're all invited to do a high five commitments, you know, to keep some practice commitments every day.
To help raise awareness for the project, the work that we do in Africa, in
yeah.
Zambia.
Yeah, yeah, and I understand they're doing a similar
thing. And they're doing it as well.
Yeah.
You know, the 1,000 children and 35 grown-ups who are there every day are doing their commitments each day as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful opportunity, and one of mine I think I stole this from somebody, was to list every night 10 appreciations, but for the practitioner specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So for the, and I write them out, and then at the end of the week I record all of them. You know, so I have a recording of 70, you know, appreciations. And but it's not just appreciations, because those can often go anywhere, but it's, I really wanted to specifically acknowledge this person that practices.
Uh-huh.
Who has rearranged her life
yeah.
to make practice first, you know, and primary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and so watching how that has been so hard over the course of my life, really, to when something was really important to me, mm-hmm. how conditioning would come in and really try to pull me away.
Uh-huh.
Introduce all kinds of, you know, there was always a honeymoon period, and then it started eroding in many ways.
Uh-huh. So there'd be something that you really wanted to do. It really felt like your heart was being called to it.
Uh-huh.
In this case, practice, but it sounds like a number of things over the course of your life.
Yeah.
And then just watching how over time, maybe at first there's a honeymoon period. Oh, this is great. I love this.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in it 100%. And then slowly over time, different things start happening where you get pulled away from it.
Yeah, yeah. And the line that was just said a few minutes ago that something like, well, I don't think this is going to be true when it's all over. You know, like, so, oh, I don't like this. I'm in the wrong place. I go, well, you know, I don't think this is going to be true when this is all over.
That's very
I love
good.
That line.
That's very good.
I think I'm going to just use that as a new one. You know, because it's such a way to step out of that story.
Yes.
To just identify, like,
yeah,
I know I feel like throwing up now, but I just don't think that's going to be the way it is.
So in a case like, you know, dedicating your life to practice and then growing through a time where it's like, gosh, do I really want to do this, Amina? And sort of going, you know what, I bet this is temporary.
Yeah.
I bet you this is going to pass. This is just a little phase, a little bump that condition is putting in the road.
Yeah, and in those times that, I mean, we all know it, when it just feels like what we call our skin, it so feels so much like us.
Uh-huh.
To be able to wedge that little bit of, don't think this. I've seen this before a million times, and I, every time I thought it was me, and I really am not thinking it's me anymore.
Uh-huh.
It's such a help.
Okay? Yes, yeah. Yeah, because even though it's all going on, it gives us the freedom not to just follow it. Not to just believe it and do what it's telling you to do.
Yeah.
So maybe what? Leave practice or quit running or take up smoking again.
Or don't floss your teeth one night. Or something like that, right, you know? Right. Just something little. And that's where it comes in, the appreciation for the practitioner. Mm-hmm. Because there's someone, I mean, there's an energy or a willingness or however we want to talk about it. And, you know, sometimes I think it's because I'm a Taurus and we're supposed to be really stubborn people, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's a something that just keeps showing up. Uh-huh. And often that, whatever it is, ignored and it's sometimes even accosted in the whole, you know, in that whole suffering process. Mm-hmm. And at best, ignored. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at worst, even kind of
undermined,
uh-huh, persecuted, or seen as the bad guy, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so to really consciously and generously and over the top wildly acknowledge that, being that presence.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it? It really, you know, all of practice always comes down to the focus of the attention.
Yeah.
What are you attending to?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we do take it back to Sri's example, so there I am, I'm in a 30-minute meditation, and all kinds of things happen, right? And I feel like I'm going to leave, and I feel like I'm going to throw up, and I feel like I'm going to faint, and I thought about it, and all this stuff. And then I don't, and I stay, right? And at the end of that, there are sort of two choices. I can focus on, well, gosh, I was so distracted, and I felt like I was going to throw up, and I felt like, or I can be focused on, I stayed.
Exactly.
I stayed. And that's where we want the attention to be, because that's what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed.
I do experience just this flood of gratitude for this practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
When we were saying the recitation together, tears started streaming, and they just came from complete gratitude and joy.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time in 7 years that I came on a Sunday and didn't have my cheat sheet for the recitation.
Wow.
And it was like when it came to the part of, you know, oh happy blessed place, you know, and you know, one of my high fives is to know the recitation by the time of the bridge walk. You know, I unfortunately have not participated in the retreat. You know, I come on Sundays and I participate, you know, through email or by phone. And I know at some point I will.
Yep.
It's in here. Yeah. And just honoring that, you know, I am on this path.
Yep.
And I am right now through this practice, and you know, life has met me where I am. And I just, the gratitude was just really amazing to watch today.
It's such a relaxing, beautiful way to live, isn't it? To know that each of us is exactly where we need to be. And how often we're bombarded inside our own heads by, well, you could have done better there, or you should have done this, or why aren't you this, or what? But to relax into realizing that I'm exactly where I need to be. Each of us is completely adequate to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to go on retreat, then I'll be going on retreat when I go on retreat. And in the meantime, I'm just going to completely enjoy where I am in practice and all that I'm receiving and all the ways I'm participating.
Mm-hmm.
And then it opens us to that gratitude, to that great gratitude for all that we're being given in every moment. Yeah, and I just love that piece of that. What it comes down to is really recognizing the practitioner, you know, because that's what it is, right? I mean, practice offers us so much in so many different ways, but each of us has to step forward to participate. That's the way that practice actually happens.
And not like just trusting life, but you know, conditioning will play a part in my practice, and it always will. It's never going to be completely gone.
Nope.
And it's finding that balance in terms of my practice with life and trusting life, and knowing that conditioning will always be there.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
So and not like saying, "Oh, well, I'm bad because conditioning has kept me from going on retreat." You know, it's
life and conditioning have played a part in me not being at retreat for some reason, you know?
Right, well, and that, you know, going back to sort of our athletics image, that Gandhi talked about it as the worthy opponent, you know? So, yeah, conditioning's always there doing its thing. And that helps me to stay on my game, you know, because it's going to be there doing its thing. And I want to be here, you know? I want to be here in this moment. Where, yes, conditioning can be doing its thing, but then it's not running my life. Mm-hmm. And then when we practice that, when it is time to go on retreat, then we'll go on retreat. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, who's to say it's even conditioning that's kept me from going on retreat? Maybe yes, maybe no. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know. But one thing we do know is that the only way to be here and to hear the cues of what life is offering to us is to get out of that conversation. Mm-hmm.
I just love that sentence, life has met me where I am. Mm-hmm. I just struck a chord. And to just, as you're saying, wow, have heavy karmic tendency to get it right, want to be different than I am, fix it, improve it, you know, and just seeing with that sentence, you know, that life has always just met me exactly where I am, and in fact, has just loved me for being exactly where I am.
Yes.
And the only thing that's ever battered me over being different is conditioned mind.
That's right.
You know, just constantly setting those standards up, like, mm-hmm. you know, as one of the classic routes to suffering.
No. What's the suffering?
Just the classic route to suffering.
The classic route to suffering, exactly, is yeah. being in that conversation, believing yeah. that assessment, that yeah. criticism, that constantly yeah. being watched, yeah. as Laura started us out
with. Yeah. Yeah.
Am I doing okay? Am I not doing it? Am I doing it right? Am I not doing it right?
Yeah.
Sucking all the energy out of a beautiful life.
Yeah. And just, you know, seeing how it can take a beautiful practice like this and turn that too, to a standard and, yeah. you know, hold up, can you do, you know, can you do this perfectly and meet that? And there's just something I heard this morning about just being able to see the absolute perfection in all of it, and to know that everything just brought us, you know, I've heard this over and over again, you know, but to just, you know, I don't know that it still has just really sunk in as a visceral experience yeah. of, you know, that everything has just brought us to exactly this place.
Yeah.
And that's life. I mean, to me, that feels like life meeting me.
Yeah. Feels like life meeting
yeah.
where you are.
Yeah.
And you know what's so great about the times when we have that perspective is available to us, that everything that came before has brought me to where I am, is that we see the wisdom of that teaching, that there are no mistakes. You know, there
yeah.
are no mistakes.
Yeah.
That it's taken everything that came before to bring me here.
Yeah.
And then we'll forget it again, right? And we'll be in some moment where
yeah.
it feels like, wow, this is a mistake,
yeah.
why did this happen, or why did I do that,
yeah.
or whatever it is, and then we just keep practicing, and then we'll open to that larger perspective again and realize, oh right, that was part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. yeah. And just as you said that, yeah, that opening to a larger perspective, and then it, you know, kind of closes down and then it opens again, and I just have you know, there's just, I realize that I have this unexamined belief that, and it is about the getting it right, you know, that by the end of my life I need to be, you know, it's that goal thing,
uh-huh.
you know?
Right.
You know?
This and it's no mistake that it's not really stated, is it?
No.
By the end of my life, I need to,
exactly.
and then the sentence trails off. Just in case
what?
You did articulate
right.
it and then got anywhere close to it,
yeah.
right, that would be trouble.
Right.
Because, of course, the point is not to get there. The point
exactly.
is to make you suffer and feeling like you're not where you should be.
right. By the end of my life, I need to be somewhere that, yeah, that.
But I'm not.
Right. That I'm not. And that's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing.
The whole thing. It just isn't.
So no matter where I am, right. It's not there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's so perfect, isn't it? I need to get there. Uh-huh. And there is always going to be there. Because yeah. It's not here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's that, well, that carrot.
Yeah.
You know.
On the end of the stick that's not, you know, it's a fixed distance from me and always will be.
Yeah, it's just such a familiar process throughout a life that, you know, a zillion different contexts have gotten stuck into, but, you know, it's just all, the whole focus is just to keep the attention away from the present and to keep the attention away from that. Life meeting me right where I am in this present moment and loving me and saying, you know, it's perfect.
Yeah. And it is.
You can rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the trick. That's the magic of practice. Mm-hmm. Is that when we do get here, mm-hmm. in this very moment, this person, nothing's changed. Nothing about life has changed. Nothing about this person has changed. But the experience of all of it is completely different. Because when I'm here, there is nothing wrong.
I think I'll just carry that sentence with me today.
Yeah.
I just love this practice, how when I'm here paying attention, everything is going to me. And I get to see so much if I'm willing.
Yes.
Yeah. And last week I was acting as a meditation guide, and just had this incredible workshop where I got to see basically everything about how conditioning controls this human's life.
Uh-huh.
The linchpin that holds it all together and the way through it. It was just like,
wow.
Yeah, pretty cool. But it was, actually the whole thing starts with trying to get it right.
Uh-huh.
And I saw how trying to get it right in the case of being a meditation guide to not screw up. To not say the wrong word, to make sure I do it perfectly.
Uh-huh.
And I saw, like, it actually has nothing to do with getting it right. That's just phase one of this process of this kind of horrible self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
It's kind of like how we've heard Sherry talk about how the conversation leads to the behavior, which reinforces the suffering identity.
Right.
So it was like, the conversation is, try not to mess this up this time, and you really want to do it right because you care so much and you're such a sincere practitioner.
Right.
And then I get in that conversation and stress and anxiety and like, oh no, what if? Right. If you said the wrong word, oh, you know.
Yep.
And then the stress and anxiety build, and I'm in that conversation, and with that stress and anxiety and being basically unconscious in that conversation, it's inevitable that the wrong words are going to come
out. Exactly right.
And then that happens, and then it's like, then there's the beatings and the punishment, and oh no, and all that kind of stuff, which just reinforces it. And I saw the linchpin that holds it all together is the process of shame and embarrassment about saying the wrong word, which is basically a giant form of taking it personal.
Yep.
As if I say the wrong word, that means something about me,
right.
Who I am. It actually, it's exposing to everyone here that I was so unconscious, and I'm such a horrible, crummy Zen practitioner, just a bad person, generally.
Yeah.
And, because I said, do wrong words, or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, that's it. And in life, it's that process of feeling embarrassed and ashamed, and taking it personally. Then I get talked into trying to hide that, cover it. And I saw, thank goodness for practice, where I don't really have a choice. If I'm the meditation guy, I'm going to do that every day that week.
That's right.
And in other circumstances, something like that would happen, and the voices would say, that feels so bad.
Yep.
It's so embarrassing to let other people in this public setting to see you behave unconsciously. So why don't you just avoid that?
Yeah, get out of it in some way. Oh, I'm sick.
Yeah.
I can't come to work this week.
Don't
put
yourself in
circumstances. So my assignment's passed.
And, exactly. Which is just protecting it.
Exactly.
And when I got that, when it was like, oh, that's just it. That's not me. I don't want to protect it. I don't want to hide it. Matter of fact, this is kind of that running through the field of landmines.
Yeah.
Intentionally, kind of like,
yep.
if unconsciousness happens, it doesn't say anything about, bad about me. It's that's the process, and I want it to happen as loudly and as boldly and in front of as many people as possible in a way, because then I really get to see it for what it is.
Right. So then it happens, you know, I say those two wrong words, and I don't go to shame. What? I'm free.
Yeah.
Because it can't do anything to me.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and it's so perfect the way you lay it out, because we picture if we had a really good friend that we were supporting in an endeavor that they were doing that was really important to them, and they really wanted to do well, would you ever use the strategy of, be really careful, try really hard, oh my god, you better, like, as they're doing it, right, yelling in their ear, oh, careful, oh my god, you almost said the wrong. No way, right? Because we know that that's going to actually undermine them.
Yeah.
But we don't realize, it doesn't ever occur to us inside our own head to go, well, no, wait a minute, that's not actually supporting me at all.
Right.
That's gunning for the opposite of what supposedly, I'm trying to do this right, I'm trying to do it well, I'm trying to be perfect. But it is going for the exact opposite of that. And the, as you say, I mean, the coup, the absolute coup is that, okay, so all that happens, and I say the wrong words, and I just have a big smile on my face. And it's going to the fact that, like, what? You have to feel ashamed. You have to be, no, actually, I don't.
No, because actually it says nothing about me and everything about you as a process.
Exactly. So, and you are just completely revealed, and I'm free.
It's great. I actually practiced that too. Like, when it happened, I just kind of laughed a little bit to myself. Like, and, you know, thank you. This is great.
Yep.
So what?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not like anything bad happened. It's not like a word falls apart. People just kept on saying the right words.
Waiting for you to join.
Which actually happened like that. And the voices said, like, well, if you mess up, then it's going to snowball out of control, and you're going to keep messing up, and you're going to be super self-conscious.
And the monster is going to burn down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And none of that happened. It was like, I said two wrong words, everyone said the right words, and then I jumped right back in. Yeah. And it was like, somewhat.
Yeah. Well, the other one is, and then we go to times when we've been sitting facing the blank white wall, someone else has been guiding and said the wrong words. Did any of that go through our head?
Nothing.
Just pick up those words and keep reciting.
If anything, compassion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wanting to be there, to be right there with the recitation so that we can support it from the sidelines and carry it on.
Yeah. We're great teammates that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's really learning to be that teammate for this person. We're often the last person to join our own team.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Which is what a huge part of this particular retreat is about, is getting on our own team.
Right.
You know, instead of being part of the opposition, being on our own side.
Yeah, rooting for this practitioner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm having an amazing experience of what it's like to be on my own team around the high five commitment. It's like becoming the person who's supporting the one keeping the commitments, and just how fun that is.
Yeah.
You know, all of these amazing things drop in, well, we could do this and this, and it's just, so fun.
So really wanting her to be successful.
Yes.
And it can seem so funny to say her, but it's me, right? But in that sense that we talk about in practice of not taking her, in this case Anna, personally, what it actually assists us to do is to love her. And to be there for her and actually want her to be successful.
Yes.
Right? So not that pseudo-successful, like, careful, do it right, don't forget, don't make any mistake, oh God, you didn't do it today, what's wrong with you? But actually being the compassionate coach who does want her to succeed.
Yes, yes. I got to see an amazing thing about that just last night where it'd been this big, big, long, big day, and I got home and one of the commitments is home care. To do something every day to care for the space that I live in. And there was I could hear that coming in, oh, you haven't, I mean, you're just, you know, too tired.
Look at you, you're too tired.
And you're not going to be able to keep this commitment today. And so there's this coaching of, let's just do one really simple, slow, gentle thing.
Mm.
So just see those things on the floor, let's just pick them up, stick them.
And initially, it's so hard. Okay, you got to scrub this place, top to bottom. And then meanwhile, it comes on the other side. You're way too tired for that. You can't do this.
Exactly. And what, I got to see this very obvious profound thing. So there was like a looking at the things on the floor and a,
I just possibly think that
I just need to, you know, I can't. And I got to see what, so because there was that one supporting a person to keep the commitment, he just said, let's just do this one simple thing with our leg. Pick them up, one at a time, and got to have the experience of picking the clothes up. Yeah. And what I got to see was that, wasn't anything to do with the experience of picking the clothes up.
Right.
It was the experience of checking in with conditioned mind.
Yes.
That was all.
Right. Right. That's draining the energy.
Yes.
That kind of, because of course, by the time we finished that conversation, we could have picked those things up three times over.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's actually energizing. To be here, to be present for the, because it sounds like really a process of caring for whatever it was, picking it up, placing it over here, meeting the commitment, not believing the voices. I mean, there were so many wins in it for the human.
Yeah. And I just got that, it got resistance in a different way, that when we hear, I don't feel like it. How can it know we're not doing it? How can it know how we're going to feel? How can it know how the experience of doing it feels?
Right.
That.
How about this? So if we start to lean down and we faint, then we'll know it was too hard. Right. Or too much. Let's at least begin.
Yeah. And so that was just the experience of listening. Checking in with the conditioned mind about something.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the experience.
Yeah.
And I tell you, this morning when I got up, I felt the appreciation for the person who picked those clothes up and got on the phone and made an appreciation recording about that to start the day. Because the whole place, it's like, you know, somehow when you've attended to something with presence, you wake up into it, and that presence gives itself back to you somehow. It like calls you to presence when you see that presence.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The way I often feel about that is that it's as if someone has done this for me.
Yeah.
Right? So, yes, I was the one who picked it up and put it there, but when we wake up in the morning and see it, it doesn't feel like that, does it? It's as if I've been taken care of.
Yeah.
And there's such a gratitude for that which was willing to go up against all those voices and to do it anyway, to take that care, and what a gift that was to you, it sounds like.
Yes.
That you got to receive that.
Yeah.
And then out of that, make an appreciation recording for the one who's doing all of that.
Yeah. And what I got to see too, it was like a moment of there is nothing wrong with you, because there was nothing wrong with all the times I felt, and I didn't pick the clothes up.
Yep.
It was just in not taking that process personally.
Yes.
And, it's amazing.
Yeah. And we can guess over time being present to it. And then there's just that moment where you're completely right here when it's happening. And you actually go up against it, you do the thing anyway, and it changes everything.
Yeah. And just the support of the commitments.
Yes.
And the support that was all doing it together.
Yes.
Like, I couldn't do this
if
it was just me trying to keep 5 commitments a day.
Right.
But knowing we're all doing it together here and in Zambia and all over the world.
Right.
I mean,
we're all the same team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. I just wanted to mention one thing. But one thing I noticed when you just said, the one thing I noticed when you said the appreciation for the person who's done the work is, you know, the rules that we have about how to wash dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very different from
call them guidelines.
Guidelines.
Right. We only have
the
one
gentle,
rule.
Compassionate guidelines.
Uh-huh.
Well,
the reason I make that distinction is we do have one rule, which is that we use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and then suffering. Everything else is a guideline to assist us in that.
So the thing I noticed when following the guidelines was I was much more mindful about how I was eating. Because I thought, oh, I don't want to have to, you know, get it, well, it's not get it wrong, per se. But I'm just like, oh, if I eat everything in the bowl, there'll be less for me to put into composting. I'm making use of all the food. It'll be much easier for me to wash the dishes. And I think this dishwashing experience is one of the easiest I've had in my life. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I should do this at home. Uh-huh. So I didn't realize it was first stressful. It's like, oh my God, how am I going to remember to wash the dishes? And then looked at him like, just eat all the oatmeal.
So, in fact, if you lick it, then you
exactly. I did think about that.
You gotta look around. Yeah. It has to be the eyes, no one's looking at you.
Yeah. But the other thing I noticed in relation to that was, you know, it's very stressful out in the normal world, the non-retreat world. When you're eating.
We call it the abnormal world.
The abnormal world, right. When you're eating, because there's a lot of social pressure to eat with people, to be in conversation with people, to, you know, so if you ever decide, well, I just want to sit by myself and eat my lunch and go back to work, you're sort of seen as an outcast.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I get to do it here. Uh-huh. You know, this is perfect.
Yeah.
And then I had all these thoughts, voices, anxiety, fear. It's like, well, nobody else is looking at me. Am I not looking at everybody the right way? Am I not eating the food the right way?
Right.
And I couldn't relax into it at all. And I've just been waiting for this experience. And I'm like, well, here I have it.
Yeah.
And I'm not able to enjoy it.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that's so funny. That's just like, you know, Sherry Huber says, is you get what you want and the voices attack you.
Yeah.
And then you do something else and the voices attack you. So you just, it's never, you can't live in that world of the voices. You have to go deeper, I guess. So it's just
something
interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Beautifully stated. Because what we get to is, we can't win.
Yeah.
You know, we think that, okay, if I could just get the right this, or just get the right that, or get what I want, or not have what I don't want, or, you know, just arrange things just right, then I'm going to get to have the experience that I want to have. And you know how often that happens to people, but they're not paying attention at the level that you're paying attention. Because that's happening to people all the time, that they're getting what they want and not realizing it and just glossing right over that fact. Yeah, but I mean, well, I couldn't enjoy my food because it's too hot. If it were cooler, then I would be, right? There's always something. But when you're really paying attention and see, oh my gosh, it's the voices that's causing that dissatisfaction, that suffering.
May I mention one more thing? I don't want to take up the conversation, but before it slips my mind, I didn't want to come on the retreat for a while because I'm like, oh, I have all the books and why do I need the retreat? And this was just asking me for more money and this is rubbish and I can figure it out on my own. And finally I, you know, made it here. And I think the one thing I've noticed that is helpful is it's, as you mentioned, it's a controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to pay attention to all those things that you might be too distracted to in the world. And the one thing I notice much more is about process versus content. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm always like, what does Sherry mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the content is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But here, when I came into the meditation hall, there was someone who was sitting next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person got up and walked away. And I'm like, oh, did I use the wrong deodorant? What happened? You know, do I, like, where did she go? What happened? And just this anxiety overtook me. And then she came back. And I'm like, oh, it's okay. I did shower today. It's all fine. And what I notice is this is what happens to me in regular life. Or why didn't this person call me back? Why is my mom not calling me? Did I upset her? Over and over and over. And I'm like, oh, it really is all process. Interesting. And I don't think I would have seen that as easily if I wasn't in
absolutely.
A controlled environment. So
yeah.
Now I see the benefit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that was it.
Yeah. And you know what's so funny? It just occurs to me as you say that, Sri, that it often does feel like such a controlled environment in the sense that there are all those guidelines, but in a sense, it's such a freeing environment because what's normally in control does not have the ability to control us in the same way. You know, so, for example, just if we go all the way back to the guideline is not to leave the meditation hall. So normally, what I would do if I don't feel like staying in meditation is I'd stand up and leave, right? But the guideline is not to do that. And so all the ways that conditioning normally controls us, it's constrained from controlling us.
Well, I figured then if I actually do have to go to the bathroom and it just happens, I'm like, I guess we'll have to clean that up here.
But it didn't, so it all worked out.
That's exactly right. It tends not to.
It tends not
to. Although everything that could happen in the meditation model has happened. And it's all fine. Right? It's all fine. Because what we're learning in that process is that we're adequate to whatever happens.
Job and I was given guidance by my boss, co-workers, just to keep the same program going. Don't change anything until people I'm working with get acclimated to things. Uh-huh. And, oh, that feels great. You know, what a nice way to transition to a job. Mm-hmm. And then like day two, here I am like, oh, I want to change this. So yeah. I want to do this.
Oh, we can do this. What about
that? Because I want to put my, you know, my stamp on it. Yeah. And, you know, and now I'm completely stressed out. Because I've changed these things, and I'm still learning the people I'm working with, and so I'm not really certain changes are even appropriate, and just a powerful meditation experience. My wife saw me just really out of it, just overwhelmed, stress, anxiety, and she's like, just go sit down, sleep, you know, your cushion.
Go to your cushion.
She threw it in my room for the other quiet hours. Just please go sit for a second. And I was just like, in meditation, like, I knew it was something I really wanted and needed, but I couldn't bear to do it for myself. And she saw it, and thank God she saw it. And as soon as I sat down, it just, like, the whole tape was cut inside that whole story. And it was such just a powerful experience. And it, you know, stress is coming up because I did create, you know, this condition created the situation where I dealt with it. But and then my self-worth is tied into it. And so it's not just like, oh, that didn't work out, so I'll try something different.
Right.
It's just you didn't work out.
Right.
You're not working out. Everyone's new, lost, so you're, and now this is my first impression. And so, but just to come back and say, you know what, I'm okay right now. And I can, and tomorrow I'll be okay right then and there. And it's kind of like just going with the stress and the stories and the shame to where it is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, that I saw the thing that I did, where it's just like, wow, I created this versus
conditioning
just conditioning. And I went with it and I didn't see it. And now I have a chance to kind of bring everything into the moment and go from there and just operate from that perspective.
Yes, isn't that so kind that we can start over in any moment? It's never too late.
And what I'm getting hammered is, well, coworkers are like, they're scrambling, people that I work with, because they're changing things, and it's like, what are they going to think if you change things again? And when I come back here, it's just like, that's not a big deal, really. And I project that they'll understand, like, oh, he's new,
that's
we're
right.
just figuring things out. And, like, well, and I would do that to somebody who
exactly.
came in who's
Precisely. That's such a good, it really is parallel to what we're looking at with Lakota, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, that getting talked into it, and then I'm supposed to feel really bad and get all stressed out, and oh, now it means all this stuff about me. But at any point, cutting that tape is such a good image for it. We can just cut that tape and be here, not at all. Right? And all kinds of things start to occur to us, like walking into my coworkers and saying, whoops, maybe not. Let's go back to this, shall we? Right? And they're all going to go, great, okay. And or not, you know, or they're going to have whatever they have going about it. But I don't need to engage with that. I mean, I love that thing you said of, am I okay in this moment? Yes. How about this one? Yes. And this one? Yep. This one? Yep. That's all we need.
And meditations, that was really, you just hammer that home for me. It's just like, wow, I don't need to go with that suffering part who just wants to lay in bed all day and just like, what did I do? And just panic over things. I can just be here right now and I was fine. And I talked to my staff right after I got the cushion because it was just like, I don't know, it's a whole different perspective on things.
Yeah. What a great asset to have someone in your life who will go throw you on the cushion.
Very right move.
Truly. That's good. Thank you. And thank you all.